back to the Rule of Three. I'm here with Brian Miller on the other side.
Hello.
And the stories today, a number one story for me, a priest stoned to death by monkeys, which have already killed two other men.
Which I like, by the way, as you pointed out in the headline you sent me, it doesn't mention the monkeys part in the headline.
No, it says priest stoned to death. It's like, oh, another ISIS story.
Bummer. And they're like, by monkeys? Ooh, click, click, click. You could rearrange the words in this headline to make a bunch of interesting. Stoned priest meets monkeys. Stoned monkeys kill priests.
Stoned priest meets monkeys.
And then you could spell monkeys a couple different ways, and it could be interesting that way. Maybe it's Davy Jones and Peter Tork or whatever. I mean, this story has so much potential, and then they just put pre-stoned to death like a big bummer.
Well, you know that back in the times... Uh-oh. Is that coming across?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
What, some stone monkeys messing with your feed there?
Yeah, monkeys messing with my feed.
They don't want the story to get out.
No, basically what happened was I opened the webpage so I could read the story, and over my earphones I could hear the newscaster reading the story.
Was he laughing at the time? Because he should have been.
No, but I bet you there was a point when the monkeys met an Indian guru who probably was inspired at the time. So yes, there probably
was a good point.
There probably was a headline: "Stoned Priest Meets Monkeys."
There's an archival version of this that's very different.
Muna Mishra was sweeping the porch of his home when a troop of the creatures began dropping stones onto him from the roof above. Severely injured, Mr. Mishra was rushed to the hospital by his family, but died a short time later. Officials in India's Michelle Gali region says the nuisance monkeys have now killed three people.
And nuisance, by the way, that is not the right word for serial killer monkeys.
Yeah, no kidding.
That nuisance Ted Bundy killed nine more nursing students last weekend.
And women and children have also been attacked by the creatures brandishing stones. Well, that's a good thing there, that they're sparing the women and children.
They're very very chivalrous monkeys, I suppose.
Yeah, they're just saying, get out of here. We got priests to kill.
Sweeping his porch is a very Indian monk priest thing to do, isn't it? Like, you just assume... Eastern holy men just do a lot of sweeping and thinking.
Yeah, yeah, you know? or Karate Kid 12.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a little wax on and whatnot.
Yeah, sweep the porch. Sweep the porch. Sweep
and the then porch. Dodge the monkey. Dodge the monkey. That was the part that Mr. Miyagi left out, apparently.
For me, what I find interesting is it's kind of the opening to 2001.
Oh,
is where up until this point monkeys have just have been flinging poo, and I mean that's actually at the Detroit Zoo. A friend of mine took me through the Detroit Zoo. She's actually a member and a big regular, and she pointed out that they had to put a roof over the viewing area of the monkey exhibit.
Oh, were they like launching it, like arcing it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they haven't perfected the speed the fastball yet. they're still doing softball pitches with it. So
now those are nuisance monkeys.
Exactly. But it's finally the monkeys have discovered rocks. That they have discovered that rocks are a much more effective weapon than poo. Poo just clears the area, you know.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure monkeys are smart enough that they know what they're doing.
I think so. Well, I think, you know, like poo would be like the non-lethal monkey weapon. Like that's like the taser or the rubber bullet of the monkey community when you're just trying to disperse some sort of human type riot situation.
Yeah. And then rocks. Once you've discovered rocks, you are now using tools. It's just a short time after that that you are going to evolve into the Middle East.
It's like, maybe we can make these rocks go really fast.
Well, no, a friend of mine pointed out that that the best way to solve the problem in the Middle East is to just go with street sweepers and pick up all the rocks. Because he said that they have been throwing those rocks at each other for 10,000 years.
I like the I like the movie angle. I like you know, it's either 2001 or, you know, could be in fact the rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, but it's monkeys. Monkeys were completely ignored. Monkeys, I mean, it was pretty much orangutan, gorilla, and chimpanzee.
That's true.
Would I believe were the three classes of human. In
the primary antagonists, as it were.
Yeah, well, the gorillas were the warriors, the orangutans were the intellectuals, and the chimpanzees were the workers, I guess. Or the scientists. I don't think there were. I guess the monkeys were the workers.
I guess that. Well, they're the sleeper cell, you know? They've been hanging out, pretending to be like one of us, just biding their time.
Yeah, but now they're going to be the rulers because they have discovered rocks.
That is a pretty crazy story. And three people. That's a lot of people. A 70s thing that was very popular that I think sadly has gone the way, I guess, of the 70s. There were a lot of movies about animal uprisings in the 70s. You know, there was, I mean, yeah, you had Piranha and Jaws, but you had Day of the Dolphin, you know. We imagined a pretty broad spectrum of animals coming to kill us. And I sort of missed that. I think maybe we ran out of convincing animals, you know. It was like Night of the Sloth or whatever. It doesn't have quite the same ring to it.
Well, yeah, and then there was also the nuclear animals. There was the fad of the nuclear animals.
Oh, of course, yeah, the kaiju from of course the kaiju in Japan, and then our giant ants of them.
Yeah,
was a classic.
Oh, I did horrors as a kid. The one scene where I think it was Kirk Douglas actually got cut in half with by an ant.
The pincers or whatever.
Yeah, the
pincers.
Yeah, I had nightmares about that one.
And the horrible excrete, that keening ant noise was always very unnerving in them, I think, that like weird high-pitched shriek thing.
Yeah. And now I think it's actually when people look back at the 2015s, I think it'll all be zombies.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. People absolutely. Will say zombies are the atomic animals of the... Well, that would have been the 50s. It would have been the atomic paranoia stuff.
Well, no, actually, one person pointed out that the zombies are the modern version of Indians.
How so?
Well, because it's pretty much the people are trying to survive in the frontier that's been created by the apocalypse.
Oh.
And there's these creatures that are devoid of all humanity that you have no qualms about just killing a lot of.
Right, the kind of others, as it were.
And brutally, yeah. It just absolutely no. They're faceless. They're ruthless. They're savages. They come in hordes, and you just have to chop your way through them to get out of the out of your settlement.
Does that mean we're going to feel really bad about all the zombie killing that happens in the movies in 2015? Like 20 years from now, we're going to be like, goo, sorry about that. Rick Grimes will be the Andrew Jackson of the...
Well, fortunately, they're fictional.
I know
some people don't believe that, but fortunately, zombies are fictional. So, yes, there's never going to be a group that opposes the defamation of zombies, of zombied Americans.
The Trail of Brains. But, you know, I always love the zombie. People love the zombie metaphor, but I don't think the zombie is a great metaphor for the American consumer because they just do too much walking. I don't think it's very representative. I think if the zombie was a great metaphor, it would be the eating while driving dead. That would be the real terror of America. Just people with ice cream cones and SUVs running you down. You know, Carl, Carl!
Or texting. Or walking down the street texting.
Yes, yeah, a lot of texting. A lot of texting.
Which I
definitely have been guilty of myself. I've been the zombified texter. Which, by the way, they probably don't do a lot of in India. What with having to watch out for the monkeys and the rocks and all.
And I think that's probably about right about time. It's a little early, but I don't think we're going to do better than that, wrapping up the story. So that's the end of segment one. Catch you on the other side.
Yeah, with the monkeys, and people say we monkey around. We're too busy singing, put anybody down. We're just trying to be friendly, come and watch, sing and play. We're the young generation.
And back on segment two of the Rule of Three, little news talk, some odd news, and you pointed out something interesting about it as a news story as well. James Dean, not the guy killed in the car crash, but the guy whose dong most of us have seen. Want to specify that. Actually, this is interesting. That makes an interesting point. So James Dean is a porn star, for those of you who want to pretend not to know.
I actually didn't know.
Really? Now, I will say he's the only male porn star whose name that I know who's not old as hell. Like, I know, you know, Peter North and Ron Jeremy and John Holmes, like the old school guys. But I don't know any contemporary – I know probably about as many contemporary porn stars as I do dubstep bands. You know, I pretty much know the number one, Skrillex and James Dean, and that's it. I'm getting old. Yeah.
I actually, when I saw Dean accused of rape, I said, oh boy, she'll never get another cooking show.
Right. You're like, oh, I just hope it wasn't a black guy. But
I was unfamiliar. Then when they started talking James Dean with two E's, I went, oh yeah, okay, I've
obvious porn title. I will say, so I saw, I heard.
Is it really? Is it really an obvious title though? I mean, usually the title involves some sort of synonym.
Yeah, some sort of homonym or a pun.
Yeah, like Peter O'Toole or something like that. Yeah,
ooh, that is a good porn name. I never even thought about that. Peter Woe Tool, that'd be a pretty good one.
There's a newscaster in Chicago for a while, Dick Johnson.
Oh, yeah, I remember Dick Johnson.
Yep.
Yeah, but I'm sure he didn't get made fun of in PE at all. Ooh, my wife works with a guy named Richard Best who goes by Dick. And all I could ever think of was his PE, you know, and they would have read him, Slagle, Tim, Miller, Brian, you know, and they read the roll-up. Great name for that. But old James Dean there, he's the only porn star, male porn star, whose name that I know. But mostly because he actually has quite a bit of mainstream crossover. He's been in some, like, regular movies. He was in Entourage, which is almost porn. Entourage is like dumber porn without the sex, but
it's bling porn.
It's bling, but that's exactly what it is. But so James Dean was sort of known as being kind of a modern porn star in the sense of you know, he's advocated for women's rights and taking care of people and kind of positive, sex positive, they call it. And so he really built his fame in part on that. And weirdly and interestingly, to his pseudo credit, I guess, before that was sort of a trend. So when I saw that, when I heard on the radio that there were rape allegations against James Dean, I thought, oh man, somebody must have uncovered some documents about the actor from 60 years ago or something. It just didn't even occur to me. And now all these stories are coming out from all these different lady porn stars who say that James Dean assaulted them in various ways. And I mean, it's pretty intense stuff. And what struck me as especially interesting about it was it seems like he was really actively, at least at some point, you know, in the last few years, kind of playing up his role as a male feminist while sort of, you know, actively going against those values, but sort of paying lip service to it. And the thing that it was interesting to me is, so to speak, as it were, not just lip service, a lot of other things, a lot of kinds of service. But what I thought was interesting is I have observed in comedy, you know how comedy is, you wind up hanging out with a lot of younger people that you might not normally hang out with, the open micers and whatnot. I've seen a lot of guys trying to get chicks by I won't say pretending to be feminist, because I'm not necessarily going to impugn their motives, but certainly by playing it up. And guys whose actions don't match it, but who do a lot of feminist talk, because that's kind of de rigueur right now. That's kind of, you know, that's in vogue. And I think, boy, isn't that way creepier than just being a scuzzbag?
But that's, you see, I think that's always the way it's been. I think guys always take on these characters that they think are going to appeal to women. I think guys, by nature, are all guys. We are just apes in clothes. All of us. We're just, we very... Yeah, I think that most of it is just put on for show. It's I've been doing a bit for years that that men aren't vegetarians. That the you show me a man that's a vegetarian, I'll show you someone trying to do a vegetarian.
I'm inclined to agree with you in general. I get frustrated on this because I have a very good friend, Laura Gillespie, who's incredibly smart. She has a doctorate in philosophy. She's a really, really cool girl, and she's a feminist. And she would get in, she would really get mad at me because while I would agree with most of her general points, and I'm very much in favor of equality, my wife is as independent a woman as you will come across, and I love that. I really do.
As a comic, I'm in favor of inequality. I think women should make more than men.
Yeah, which my wife does. Much, yeah, exactly.
Much, much more.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you on that. But what's interesting to me is that all the guys that I know, my friend Laura would always want me to identify as a feminist, and I said, no, I just don't want to. I don't wear political labels. It's just not what I do. And she got very angry at me and said, if you don't identify as a feminist, then you're holding back the cause or whatever. But what I've kind of found over the years is that the guys that I know, like my buddy Chris, for instance, who's a very, very smart, very enlightened fellow, he believes in equality, but he doesn't feel the need to broadcast it. It's just something that he's like, well, yeah, you just do it. And that the guys who spend all their time broadcasting how incredibly open-minded they are have a real agenda.
Yeah. Well, I think the best example is Bill Clinton.
Sure.
Is here he was going around, telling women that he was down for the struggle, and when he would get them alone, he would hold them down until they struggled.
Wow. Well, John Mulaney on his new special, a very funny comedian who used to live in Chicago, does a really great bit, and I don't want to give too much of it away, but about how his parents went to college with Clinton, with Bill. And how his dad hated Bill because Bill, they had this thing where the guys would volunteer to walk women home from the library late at night to keep them safe. And apparently Bill was like the number one volunteer to walk these ladies home and keep them safe.
I used to do an impression back in the day. It is, I feel your pain. And while I'm at it, I'm going to feel them titties too.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to it, so I think smart women generally can tell, my writing partner is a woman, and she stays at my house, and I stay at her house, and she's great. We never talk about whether or not I'm a feminist. She's just like, oh, he's not a creep, and I've never felt the need to expound at great length about what a creep I'm not to assure her, because I'm not a creep. So the guys who do all the, boy, I'm open-minded, boy, I'm sure the farthest thing from a creep, it reminds me of the car salesman, Honest Pete's Cars. It's like, really?
And I find that, with racism as well.
Yes, absolutely.
There's one comic, I'm not going to name him, but mm-hmm. there's one comic that does a lot of material about, he's white, mm-hmm. Racial insensitivity and how we need to be more open-minded as a society and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I was drinking with him one night. And I said, how can you justify affirmative action? And he said, they need affirmative action because we bred the intelligence out of them during slavery.
Oh, my God.
And I, yeah.
That's horrible.
I know. Wow. I know. And I just looked at him and I said, you're not being ironic, are you? He goes, no, I'm dead serious. We owe black people affirmative action for doing that to them.
Yeah, that's why I think a good lesson in life, I think you got to be wary of people who front their virtue. I think like people who really believe in the right things or people who try to really do right by other people don't call attention to it. They just consistently do it and you notice it. But I think when people fly that flag a little too much, especially when it's not their group, when they're like, oh, I'm definitely super important. So I got to help these other guys. You go, really? Ooh, what exactly is your angle? And that's why the James Dean thing in retrospect, I guess, maybe shouldn't have surprised me as much as it did.
Well, hello, he's a porn star.
Well, there's, and you know, I'll tell you what, this is very dark. My wife and I were talking about this last night, and she said that she read an article, and she was just disgusted, written by a woman who made the argument that you cannot rape a porn star or a prostitute. It's only theft of services. Like, wow, that's dark.
And it's a good thing that we're out of time, because
we'll bring it back up on segment three.
No, we won't. That's all. See you on the other side.
And we're back for the third segment of the first December episode of Rule of Three. A little Christmas talk here with Tim Slagle, and I'm Brian Miller here.
Yeah, let's get the Christmas talk out of the way before everybody's sick of Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you. Now, I'm a little bit obsessed with this Elf on the Shelf. Are you familiar with the Elf on the Shelf?
Yeah, it's after my time, but
mine too.
But this is
new, right?
Well, I recognize the elf, though. That's the weird sort of thing, is that
I know that guy.
Yeah, it was that elf. I had seen that elf around in my Christmases before, and I didn't realize that elf actually had been given a position within the within the Santa Stasi.
The Santa Stasi. That is totally what he is. He's the Santa Stasi. That's what's so fascinating to me about this. I did not know about this Elf on the Shelf thing until maybe a year or two ago, and my brother was telling me about how he does it for his kids. And my brother is a very funny guy. And so, you know, the whole thing, if for those of you who don't know, it's this elf, and I think you put it out, I don't know, the day after Thanksgiving or the first day of December, and the whole point is the elf sits on the shelf, and he keeps an eye on the kids for Santa. He's the Santa Stasi. He's the NSA.
The informer.
Of the North Pole. The North Pole Security Administration or whatever.
I would actually, you know, that might be a fun idea, is to market a line of Elf on the Shelves that's dressed up in more of a military uniform with maybe with headphones and one of those reverse bullhorns, one of those, yeah. to hear conversations from the other room.
He's got a sat phone and a little laptop, and he's
make him look a little more intimidating, though. In our last segment, that maybe the fact that he looks adorable is even more frightening.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, good point. Yeah, the elf, I guess, he's supposed to spy on the kids, and then the gag is then that every night the parents move the elf somewhere else in the house, and so the kids are very excited when they wake up to run and see what the elf's been up to. And my brother, like I said, is a very, very funny guy. He's a great dad, very, very creative guy too. And so my sister-in-law was telling me all the funny stuff that my brother had this elf doing, and it was elaborate. My brother would build like zip line courses and have the elf ziplining through the house, and he really gets into it. I was thinking how it was like, oh, that's really fun. But then I started thinking about it, and I thought, this Elf on the Shelf, it doesn't surprise me that it's a modern invention, and it reminds me of Facebook and what I would consider, maybe overstate the case a little bit, the new Stasi. What we've done with the Elf on the Shelf is we've gotten these kids to participate in their own oppression enthusiastically. I mean, these kids are thrilled to have this hall monitor following them around. As far as they know, a magical possessed dummy that is reporting to a godlike figure who controls their revenue stream. And they've got this elf, and he's keeping an eye on everybody, and the kids love it. And I'm thinking, that's what Facebook is for adults. Facebook is our Elf on the Shelf. You know, we put all of our information, we report on Foursquare, we got our cell phones with the GPS chips. We have our own elf, you know, and it's really no different.
Speaking of the GPS, there's I just saw this, and it was actually, I clicked on a Facebook ad because I was curious about it. There's some people are trying to sell a new dating app right now that actually monitors your movement throughout the day and shows you when you've been in the proximity of someone else with the same dating app.
Oh, so kind of like Grindr, I think, wasn't that? Oh no, Grindr was different.
Grindr's Tinder for boys.
Right. There was a Gaydar. There was an app called Gaydar. I think, at one point, probably maybe still is, and it would alert you if you were within X number of feet of another guy who was on the Gaydar app, or lady, I guess, who was on the Gaydar app.
Well, no, a guy.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, you're right. I don't know why I qualified that.
It's all guys.
That's definitely a dude kind of thing.
It's like, yeah, it's like, ooh, let's see who I bumped into today that might have wanted to do me.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's a total guy thing. It's but you know, but it does sort of have a female aspect to it. I saw you, did you see me? You on a subway wearing a trench coat, me in the corner with leg warmers, blushing every time you looked at me. So it does have a
missed connections type.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, for women it's sort of a missed connections, and for guys it's like I want that one. It's sort of a stalk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it definitely has that dual functionality to it.
Yeah, because you bump into her on the subway, it's like, "Oh, okay." And now you can just randomly walk around where the subway stop is and see if she pops up again on your app. And But I don't know if women would think it through that far.
I don't, or if they did, if they'd want that guy, like,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's just an interesting invention, and I'm just thinking it through for the first time here. It's it was kind of like Tinder, but the way they sold it was, you know, it's people you work with, people in your own social station, people that like doing the same kind of things you do.
Sure, you're around where they are, apparently, right? You're sharing proximities.
Right. So if you're at a One Direction concert, you know, you can find the one straight guy at the One Direction concert.
Yeah, I do think because I'm a very private person. I don't like financial transactions online, and I don't like to tell people where I am, and I've never liked the aspect of the cell phone, where once the cell phone kind of became popular, it just became common to sort of like furiously ask somebody where they are right now all the time, as though you have the, you know, right to that answer. It's like, I don't know, I'm doing my thing, you know.
Yeah. Why do you ask?
But yeah, so I've never liked that, and so this Elf on the Shelf thing is interesting, because I do think it perhaps does signify a kind of shift that the whole culture is going through, where people are really eager to give away all their details. People, you know, transparency in politicians is way less popular than transparency among us.
Yeah. Well, it's also, you know, it's due to the NSA, you know, which did not exist 15 years ago. And the helicopter generation.
Yeah. We used to be afraid of that. Remember black helicopters in the 90s? And you're talking helicopter parents, I assume, right?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, it's kids grow up now expecting that they're going to be monitored all the time.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess it's true. If you go through the first 18 years of your life under constant surveillance, it doesn't really seem that weird when at year 19 it just keeps on going.
Did you see the woman? It's in California. She's being arrested because she let her kid go to the playground by himself.
Oh, I saw that. That's crazy. We used to do, we'd go get ice cream or go buy comic books or go to the park. I mean, you know, we wouldn't go miles away, but half a mile away, mile away.
Granted, the kid was four.
Well.
No, but the tot lot was 120 feet from her front door.
So it's all but a playground. It's all but a swing set in her front yard. All but.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it might be in the middle of a cul-de-sac. I didn't sure. really read too far into it. But she's facing, they offered her a plea of 30 days in jail.
Ugh.
30 days with the kid in foster care.
Yeah, because that's way better for the kid than being unattended on a slide for 75 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, we are so mad at your mom for letting you play on the teeter-totter without supervision. We're going to...
You know, pretty soon what's going to happen? The government will just assign us all an elf. It will be an actual short man who follows us around, and he reports on all of our doings to everywhere we go. But apparently, we will think it's great.
Wow, how nice that the little people won't have to wait for the next remake of Oz for employment.
Well, I think that brings us up to the tail end of segment three.
Yeah, that pause definitely sounded like the end of it.
Well, maybe we'll have some more hot holiday talk. I like that idea of breaking down the Christmas carols. Sneak peek at a future episode.
Yeah, we'll try to do a Christmas episode every week for this.
I like it. I'm a holiday guy. Month. So, we'll see you back next time on Rule 3. Oh, and if you're dying for some more Brian Miller in between now and then, at B Miller Comedy on Twitter or BrianMillerComedy.com with a Y.
And TimSlegel.com. You can see all the episodes, get all the episodes through there, plus video and other stuff. And that's that. See you next week.
See you next week.
Felice.